When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
On this podcast, it's never too early to look ahead to 2022. Let's talk to the pros. Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. My name is Ryan Wormley. I do social media here, and joining me for today's show are a couple of great guests, as always. First up, you know him, you love him, it's Kyle Yates. Yates, how have you been, my man? It feels like it's been forever since we've actually done a show together.
I feel like that too, man. But yet you look at it and it's like, it's only been a couple of weeks. It's just, it's time is flying by, man, through the holidays and everything like that. But I'm doing great, man. Got to watch some playoff football yesterday and Saturday. And now we've still got a game here tonight as we record on Monday. Like, yeah, I'm doing well, man.
Yeah, only a couple of weeks, but a very busy couple of weeks right. In terms of the part of the year and the calendar that we're in. Also joining us today is Andrew Erickson of PFF. Andrew, how excited are you for the divisional round? We have some pretty good matchups coming up next week.
Yes, I'm super excited for some divisional playoff. I mean, look, I get that we like more playoff games, but, you know, putting 7 seeds against number 2 seed, like all we're doing is just having more bad teams make the playoffs. Like, like we saw the Pittsburgh Steelers, like a lot of blowouts in the wild card round. You know, the only game that was really, really close, again, you had the Bengals Raiders game was kind of back and forth, but the Bengals really, you know, they should have blown out the Raiders, you know, if they converted more in the red zone. And then you also had, you know, the Cowboys 49ers game, that was the game with the closest spread, and that was the best game of the week. And that was really like the upset a lot of people were picking. A lot of people liked 49ers plus three. 49ers ended up coming away with the victory over some controversy, of course, with the Dallas Cowboys. You can't have a playoff game without the Dallas Cowboys controversy. So a good, solid week of games. I'm looking forward to Monday night, but I think we're going to get, you know, Bills, Chiefs. Oh, man, like that game. I'm canceling all my appointments, everything. I'm just going to be sitting down watching that game very, very intensely.
Yeah, even the Cowboys game, that was a blowout for most of the game. It wasn't until the very end that it got exciting. So you're right, there were a lot of blowouts throughout the weekend. Hopefully the divisional round is a little bit better. As always, I want to make sure the listeners can find the three of us online. Yates' Twitter handle is at KyleYNFL. Andrew is at Andrew_Erickson_. And I can be found at Ryan Wormley. That's Wormley like how you dress when it's cold outside. And of course, we can always be found everywhere at Fantasy Pros. I also want to mention our giveaway going on at fantasypros.com/contest, where you can enter to win a free signed Jalen Waddle jersey. No, Yates, you're not eligible to win.
Dang it.
All of our listeners, all they have to do is subscribe to our YouTube channel, take a screenshot, and submit that screenshot to fantasypros.com/contest to have a chance to win. And while you're at it, check out everything we have to offer on our YouTube channel, even just beyond our fantasy football podcast. We've got quick hitting advice videos, live streams, and a whole lot more all year long. So make sure you're subscribed and click the bell to get notifications for all of our latest videos. And I also want to take a moment to shout out the winner of this year's Touchdown Calls contest. contest where listeners made touchdown predictions each and every week of the season. This year's winner, who correctly called a whopping 33 touchdowns this season, was RZ Akola. I'm not sure how to pronounce that correctly. Also topping 30 touchdowns was Jupak Shakur, the Brock 10. They both had 32. Mr. Buster and Celtic Playboy with 31. And Mike Yazigi and Roach with 30. But congratulations again to RZ Akola, I think, for his impressive performance. Fellas, let's jump right into today's show. We're going to be going through some position takeaways for running backs and quarterbacks today, in addition to projecting some potential cap casualties later in the offseason. Let's start with the running back position because, as always, it's the most important one to get right every season. And I want to start by running through the top 12 at the position. This is in half-point PPR leagues. And I'll also give you where their ADP was going into 2021. I'm going to read a lot of information at you right now. Don't worry. We'll go back and repeat some of these names. But starting from 12 to 1, we have Antonio Gibson, 186.5 points. His ADP was 16th overall. That's RB12. Alvin Kamara, 194 points. ADP of 4th overall, RB4. At 10 was Nick Chubb, 198.8 points. That's 6th overall, RB6. Aaron Jones, 203 points, 7th overall, RB7. Cordero Patterson, 206 points, ADP of 238th overall, RB71. That one was a tough one to find. He wasn't even on a lot of the ADP lists. James Conner, 214 points, 96th overall. That's RB37. Zeke was at 219, 5th overall, RB5. Leonard Fournette, 221 points, 86th overall, RB33. Najee Harris, 256 points, 15th overall, RB11. Joe Mixon was 3rd, 266 points. That's 19th overall, RB13. Austin Eckler had 282 points. He was 13th overall, RB10. And number one, of course, unsurprising, Jonathan Taylor, 342 points, which was 60 more than number two at the position. His ADP was 9th overall at RB8. I need to catch my breath after
Seriously,
all that.
Man, you good?
Yeah. So let's go back and we'll do sort of that bottom six to start. So 12 to 6, that's Gibson, Kamara, Chubb, Jones, Patterson, Connor, Yates. I'll start with you. What's your biggest takeaway from that range?
Well, I think that it's the biggest takeaway within this range, but also as you look at the overall top 12, and I think J.J. Zacharyson is famous for coining the term ambiguous backfields, right? And I think that as you look at this list, the way that we can get an edge in going into 2022, and I talked about this on a recent podcast too, is like targeting those ambiguous backfields. You look at this list, Jonathan Taylor, he was in a somewhat ambiguous backfield because we didn't know exactly what Nyheim Hines' role was going to look like. Marlon Mack, you know, RB8 ADP, Austin Eckler too. We didn't know if there was going to be a secondary guy in there, but then you get down into this lower tier and you go Leonard Fournette. We had no idea how that backfield was going to play out with Ronald Jones. James Conner, we really didn't want to target that one because we didn't know what the split was going to look like with Chase Edmonds. Cordarrelle Patterson, of course, that was just that's a fluke as far as what that backfield looked like. And then you get down to the list and even Antonio Gibson, we didn't know exactly. So as I scan that list, I think that I am going to be more willing to take shots in the mid rounds and the later rounds on these ambiguous backfields, the backfields that we don't exactly know how they're going to play out, because that leads to a massive edge if you get it right. If you take the shot on the player, and like, for example, I wanted no piece of Leonard Fournette going into the year. I had him on zero rosters because at that point of the draft, I thought that Ronald Jones was going to be the guy in this backfield. And I remember that Thursday night game when Tampa Bay played and kicked off the NFL season, seeing Leonard Fournette come out there and get the majority of the carries. I remember texting Dan Harris and being like, I missed big time on Leonard Fournette, and that's going to come back to bite me in the accuracy competition. Like those situations where you take the shot, and if it doesn't work out, guess what? It doesn't work out. It's fine. At that point of the draft, it's not going to come back and hurt you. But in these situations where if you had taken the shot on James Conner as a depth piece, Leonard Fournette as a depth piece, that would have been a massive advantage for you in the 2021 fantasy football season. So as I know that I talked about the overall takeaways here, Ryan, but like looking at that list, that's the big thing for me going into next year, is that I'm going to be looking at the situations where we don't have clarity. We don't know what the breakdown's going to be. And I'm going to be more willing to take shots on those guys because it could lead to a top 12 finish at the running back position.
Again, Andrew, that 12 to 1 is Gibson, Kamara, Chubb, Jones, Patterson, Connor, Elliott, Fournette, Harris, Mixon, Eckler, Taylor. What's your biggest takeaway from that top 12?
Yeah, I think, we're kind of repeating and echoing what Kyle mentioned about the ambiguous backfields, but also adding in the element of just pick running backs on good offenses. Like it's much easier for us to project an offense as a whole, whether they're going to be, you know, above average or below average heading into the season, as opposed to like trying to predict, oh, like how's their defense going to be? Are they going to be negative game script? That's a lot tougher to project year over year, where for the most part, we are pretty on about, you know, most of the offenses overall. Like we knew the Buccaneers were going to be a good offense. We did know that. Like that was, you know, you could see that across the board with just looking at ADP of other players. Like look at the market, like all the, you know, Godwin, Mike Evans are all going in the third round, Brady's going high. Like, so, you know, you don't even need to do a lot of like legwork necessarily to figure out which offenses are good, but then it's a matter of, okay, well, if this is the starting running back on a good offense, then they're, you know, RB33 for Leonard Fournette doesn't make any sense, even though we're not sure it could be Jones. And that's why there was, you know, the value of those two running backs. It's like, you know, you got to take shots on both of them. Like you should take Jones here, take Fournette here, because it really could have been a toss up, you know, between the two guys. And I think that's kind of what happened with James Conner. You know, he played on a good offense. We knew the Cardinals had an explosive offense. Now, it doesn't really necessarily fit as well with Cordarrelle Patterson, but there's always going to be exceptions to the rule. But Patterson obviously fits the mold of the ambiguous, where Mike Davis was easily the worst running back out of those three guys, like compared to Ronald Jones or, you know, even like a Chase Edmonds player. Like, you know, I would have rather had those other guys except for Mike Davis. So pinpointing those types of players in, and when you target running backs in good backfields, you should have touchdown equity. I think that's a really big thing here. Looking at Jonathan Taylor and Austin Eckler, who are the top two guys in terms of fantasy points scored, Jonathan Taylor had 92 touches in the red zone. 92.
It's absurd. You know,
the next closest guy was Eckler at 62. He had 30 more red zone carries or touches than Austin Eckler did. And so that's why it's not even close, because the touchdowns is what ultimately delivers these league winning players. So if you can lock in on a running back, especially with like James Conner specifically, like that was his bread and butter. Like a lot of the buzz in the offseason was James Conner, you know, has X amount of goal line carries and Chase Edmonds has like one in his entire career. So, I mean, is this really surprising that Conner scored 18 touchdowns because he was the goal line back on a good offense? So things like that. And you know, it also worked out for Austin Eckler. We weren't sure, oh, is he going to get the red zone role, you know, in this new offense? You know, they have Kelly, they have some Larry Roundtree, some other guys, and he did get it. And that's why he finished so highly, because he did get the red zone role. And that's why I think we should be really high on him going into next year as well.
Yeah. And on Patterson, I think it's fair to basically just throw him out of the discussion. He was such an outlier, such an unexpected fluke. Like, there's really not much, I don't think, that you can put into evaluating what happened. You just don't see these massive leaps. I mean, again, every single other running back I just mentioned, their ADP was in the top 100 overall, most of them in like the top 40 overall. And he was at 238th. And again, I'm not even sure if that's accurate. That was just the best I could find, because he wasn't right, being drafted pretty much anywhere. So I think it's fair to sort of throw him out of the conversation. I want to sort of ask you guys about some of the names that aren't on the list. The top three running backs in most leagues in ADP going into 2021 were Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, and Derrick Henry. Now, they're all not on here for different reasons from each other. But for those three guys, is there anything specific you attribute to some of these other guys surpassing them, a guy like Dalvin Cook particularly, because it wasn't the injury-based reasons that he wasn't playing? Or are you sort of throwing out 2021 saying, you know, those guys are still first-round picks going into 2022? Andrew, I'll start with you on that.
So the name, so McCaffrey.
McCaffrey, Cook, and Henry. And again, obviously two of them had major injuries.
Yeah, I think with McCaffrey, I think we just needed to, like, you know, figure out and kind of admit to the fact that the guy's probably going to miss games. Like, it's same thing with Dalvin Cook. Like, Dalvin Cook misses games every single season. Like, it's not abnormal for him to miss games. So you need to just know about that when you draft him. When he plays, like, he's a stud. Like, that's awesome. But you're just going to have to be ready for weeks when he's not available. So whether that's prioritizing Alexander Mattison, because every time Mattison takes over, you know, we don't need to see this again. He's such a proven handcuff of a high priority that, you know, maybe you really need to make sure that you get him. And even though I know, like, some people don't like drafting handcuffs, you know, maybe with Dalvin Cook, it's a special condition where, you know, like, that's like the move he should do. Like, you should draft both those guys. McCaffrey, again, you know, it's been back-to-back years where he's been a stud when he's been on the field, but it's been for such a limited time. You know, they've already paid him, so they have an incentive to, like, maybe we shouldn't be giving this guy the ball 30 times per game because he keeps breaking down. Like, they've already paid him. So it's like they're in a situation where hearing him rumored in trade. So it's like, you know, are they trying to get rid of damaged goods? Like, what's the deal here? So McCaffrey, there's obviously some concern with him. And then Derrick Henry, you know, he was, you know, breaking the mold. Like, he had seen so much volume that it's like, oh, this guy can't be stopped. And, you know, basically everyone that faded him was just crying because he was just on another dominant turn for the first 8 weeks of the season. You know, I think he still finished like top five in rushing despite not playing since Halloween.
It's so stupid.
But he got hurt. So, you know, is that, you know, a victory lap for people that faded Derrick Henry? I don't know. Like, again, you know, you never want to wish an injury on somebody, but, you know, when you touch the more you touch the ball, the more likely you are to eventually get hurt. So, yeah, there's concerns with all of these guys, and I think, you know, just from an injury perspective.
Yeah, Yates, what about you? Are you putting those three guys all in the first round next season, or, and how'd you rank them, I guess?
Yeah, I do think that we need to keep them in the first round conversation. I think that with McCaffrey, we can't view him as the consensus RB1. We had that, like, still, even after his injury in 2020, excuse me, going into 2021, it was still that he's the consensus RB1, because when he plays, he's going to get a ridiculous workload. That was his first injury, right? All those things lined up where it was still the right move to take McCaffrey at the RB1 spot, because we still saw the amount of work that he got when he is healthy and on the field. So I think that we have to adjust expectations with McCaffrey. We can't view him as that consensus RB1, but he is still, he's going to be mid-round RB1 status for me, like mid-round, the first round for me. Dalvin Cook, I think in that same territory, like, this is just what Cook does. He's going to get a ridiculous workload, but he's not going to play all 17 games. You know, it's just not what he does. So you have to, if you do take Dalvin Cook in the first round, which you still should do, you have to make sure that you reach a round or two on getting Alexander Mattison, right, as that high level insurance running back. And then Derrick Henry, I mean, yeah, I'm still drafting Derrick Henry in the first round, right? Like, based on the workload and what he did, there's no reason why we should bounce him outside of the first round with this injury. So yeah, I think all three of those guys are certainly still locks for the first round. I'm just going to be, where exactly do we rank them in within that tier? I think that for me going into next year, I will probably have Derrick Henry above Christian McCaffrey and then Dalvin Cook. I think that that's probably going to be the way that I have it, but of course it's still a long way off.
And quickly on Henry Yates, does his performance in the playoffs, whatever he does in the next couple of weeks, will that impact how you rank him next season? Or is the track record long enough that as long as he seems healthy, you're fine going back to him?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that it will affect my confidence, right? If he comes out and he gets 20 plus carries and he looks like Derrick Henry, you know, then it's like, okay, I have complete confidence in drafting this guy as a mid-round RB1. But then I think that if he comes out and he, you know, struggles, he doesn't look the same coming off that injury, it might affect my confidence slightly, but it's like, we know that he's going to have plenty of time to rest up and heal. So I think that really I'm taking what happens here in the playoffs with a grain of salt with Derrick Henry.
Before we move on from today's show, I'd like to talk about today's first sponsor, LinkedIn. It can be hard to find and hire the right candidates for your small business, especially in the workplace changing during the pandemic. That's why LinkedIn Jobs made it easier to find the people you want to talk to faster. And the part everybody loves to hear, it's free. I've never personally been in a position to hire anyone, but I've been on the job market many times. It's the nature of this business, and I've never found an easier, more comprehensive job site than LinkedIn. If you are lucky enough to be hiring, you can create a free job post in just a few short minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 770 million people. Focus on candidates with the exact skills and experience you need to take your business over the top, and then use screening questions to get your role in front of only the most qualified candidates. Then just use the simple tools on LinkedIn Jobs to quickly filter and prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. Their tools and wide reach are why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires compared to their leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates you want to talk to faster. Did you know every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? Post your job for free at linkedin.com/fantasypros. That's linkedin.com/fantasypros to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. So, Andrew, we know that Jonathan Taylor is going to be the first guy off the board in pretty much every league next season. What running back other than Taylor would you most consider ranking first overall, even though the answer is probably going to be zero across the board?
Yeah, no, I mentioned him earlier as kind of the guy right behind Jonathan Taylor in terms of red zone usage, and it's Austin Eckler. I think for me, I look at, you know, he doesn't see every down roll. He doesn't play on every single play, but he has a three down skill set. He has a better receiving role, I would argue, than Jonathan Taylor does. So that does give him a little bit of extra edge in terms of PPR, half PPR scoring. And I mean, his red zone role is also very enticing. So he doesn't necessarily need to carry the load. He doesn't necessarily carry the ball in between the tackles like Jonathan Taylor does, but he was second in fantasy points per game behind Jonathan Taylor this past season. And he plays on a better offense. You know, no one's going to be surprised if the Chargers offense is a top five unit next year and the Colts are more mediocre. You know, it was because Jonathan Taylor had the vice grip on all the scoring. You know, if the Colts defense regresses, if they're worse, if they have to throw, if they're playing from behind more often, okay, well, what does that mean for Jonathan Taylor? It means less scoring opportunities for him. Like, that's why he was the number one running back, because nobody had the better red zone usage than he did. You know, no one saw more opportunities in the red zone or scored more touchdowns than Jonathan Taylor. So in a scenario where Eckler equals him in touchdowns and then has an edge in terms of receiving yards and a better offense, I think Austin Eckler, there's a path for him to potentially be the number one running back in fantasy.
What about you, Yates? Is it Eckler for you also? I know you love Joe Mixon. Maybe Najee Harris is in a better offense next season. Who's the guy you would most put your stock on for the number one overall pick next year if Jonathan Taylor wasn't an option?
Well, it's funny because there really isn't that consensus option. You just listed off several names, and that led me to this thought process led me to put out on Twitter the other day the question of Jonathan Taylor goes number one overall in your league. Who are you taking as the number two running back off the board? And it got like 500 plus comments on Twitter. It was insane the amount of people that replied to it. And the answers were all different. Like there, it was Eckler, it was Mixon, it was Derrick Henry, it was Christian McCaffrey, easy. You know, people are like chiming in, it's Christian McCaffrey, easy. And then the next person, the next comment I read is like, it's Joe Mixon, easy. You know, like all these, it's not easy. So I think for me, it's going to come down to Austin Eckler or Derrick Henry, quite honestly. As far as with Derrick Henry, knowing that solid and stable floor, that when he is healthy, we know the production is just going to be off the charts. With Eckler, I have questions about, okay, what, do they bring in another complimentary running back this year? Does Justin Jackson take a larger step forward, right? Does he continue to take that RB2 role to take some pressure off of Eckler? Because we know that touchdown regression is coming. Austin Eckler is not going to score 20 touchdowns again next year. So all that just kind of goes together where I think it's between Austin Eckler, it's between Derrick Henry. We got to see how the rest of the offseason shakes out before we confidently say, like, this is going to be the guy. But I'm telling you right now that next year when we do our mock drafts and everything, it's going to be all over the board.
Yeah, first of all, that's classic Twitter for everybody to say, oh, it's so obvious, and then pick a different answer from each other. So I'm not surprised that happened for you. You mentioned the touchdown regression, and we did touch on James Conner a little earlier. He's one of the most difficult guys, I think, going into next season to try and figure out where you're going to rank him. And obviously, there's a whole offseason ahead of us. We need to see how, you know, running back depth charts shake out and everything. But as of right now, about what range would you put him? Is he definitely in the RB2 range? I mean, I know some people who are saying that because of the touchdown regression, he might not even be worth drafting in the top 20, 24 running backs. So, Andrew, where do you think you're going to draft James Conner next year based on just what we know right now?
Yeah, so I have him ranked right now RB22, again, subject to change because he's a free agent, Chase Edmonds is a free agent, and he's related to the offense. Like, he scored 18 touchdowns because he played on a good offense. And so if he goes to a team that's not a good offense, then he's not going to score as many touchdowns. Just a fact. Like, if he goes to Miami, it's like, okay, like, this is not going to be nearly as good behind the worst run-blocking offensive line in the league. Like, James Conner's not going to have the same type of season. And I'll be interested to see how the NFL treats James Conner in free agency. You know, this reminds me a lot of LeGarrette Blount. You know, when he had an 18 or 20 touchdown season, and nobody signed him because they all knew it was like, yeah, well, you were a product of the offense you played in. And like you kind of point out here in the show sheet, you know, averaged a career low yards per carry this season. So he really was, you know, a product of his surrounding, which is fine. Like, he made the most of the opportunities he got on him, but I'm probably going to try to not be super aggressive on James Conner because I don't know if he's going to be able to repeat. I know that he probably won't be able to repeat these touchdowns, especially, you know, if Chase Edmonds is healthy, if they both come back to Arizona. I mean, it was kind of the perfect storm for James Conner for him to end up scoring so many touchdowns this season.
Yates, where are you ranking Conner?
Yeah, like Andrew alluded to, it's interesting because I think we have James Conner and Chase Edmonds both as pending free agents. So it's going to be interesting to see, are they both back? Is it just one of them? What does that situation look like? But if assuming that both are back in Arizona, right, let's play that forward, then I think that RB22 ranking is pretty justified. Like, it's going to be in that range for me because he still will be worth drafting and still be someone that you can have on your roster, and he can provide the spikes for you where if he does continue to score touchdowns at a ridiculous rate, then great, you've got that as your RB2, then I think that you're able to live with those ups and downs, but you know that he's not going to provide you a ton of yardage. He's not going to necessarily be someone that soaks up targets out of the backfield if Chase Edmonds is still back there, right, and healthy. So you have to take all that into account. He's touchdown dependent, but in that offense where we know that he's going to score, you know, they're going to score touchdowns, he has a solid bet of doing that every single week.
I want to ask you guys before we wrap up our running back discussion about the zero RB approach, because that has obviously become something that's very prevalent in the last couple of years, really the last several years in fantasy football. And this season, I think, was an interesting case for it. On the one hand, you have a lot of really strong results from the mid-round guys, guys like James Conner and Leonard Fournette that we've already mentioned, Damian Harris, Javonte Williams. These are guys that tended to pay off, especially late in the year, that you took a chance on in mid-rounds. But also, when you look at the top 12, a lot of those guys wore first and second round picks, like Gibson and Kamara and Chubb and Jones and Taylor and Eckler and Mixon. These are all guys that we were taking early. So did you see anything this year that changes how you would view the approach of zero RB going into next season? Yates, I'll start with you.
I think that this is still a strategy that I will personally stay away from, but I do think that based on what the results that we saw this past year, I are people calling it hero RB? Like what I'm not exactly sure what exactly they're calling it, but that concept of taking one of the stud running backs in the first or second round, you make sure that you lock up that position with at least one of the guys. And then like I talk, you load up on wide receivers. You just load up with those solid guys that you know are going to produce. And then coming back and taking the shots for your RB2 spot, your RB3, your RB4 on your roster, on the guys that we talked about earlier with the ambiguous backfields, on good offenses, right? That I'm so glad that you added that, Andrew, where it's like ambiguous backfields on good offenses, right? You don't want to be loading up on the Miami situation, right, with Myles Gaskin and, you know, whoever else was healthy at that point of the year, Savon Ahmed and everything. You know, like that's, you want to be able to load up on these guys and take shots. And if one of those hits, then great, you've got your solid RB2 to go along with that hero running back, that guy who is going to produce in a big way. But yeah, I would still prefer to lock up one of the top tier guys and make sure that I at least feel confident that I've got that position set, and then take multiple dart throws at the RB2 spot.
Andrew, what about you? Are you considering zero RB in 2022?
Yeah, I did some zero RB drafts this season, and unfortunately, you know, I executed it to perfection, but I also drafted guys like Calvin Ridley, Allen Robinson, Robert Woods, Julio Jones, Kyle Pitts, George Kittle. Like, that's the thing. Like, you can do the hit on the some receivers that are correct and not draft running backs. Like, it's not hard. You just don't draft any. But if you draft the wrong receivers, then it doesn't matter. Like, that's like a really key point that people need to take away. It's like, yeah, okay, you're not drafting running backs, but then who do you draft instead? If you draft the wrong receivers, then it's like, it doesn't matter what you did. Like, you're still going to be behind the eight ball. So it's like, goes back to just draft good players. Like, that's ultimately what you have to do. So that's why I think that you never want to be super, super strict with your strategy going and be like, no, I can't draft any running backs. Even if there's like, you know, it's like, oh my God, like there are like so many studs on the board because everyone else is doing zero RB. So it's like, no, like you should still take a value-based approach, but I do agree with Yates. I think that hero RB, you know, drafting one stud running back is still my preferred approach within the first two rounds. Just really hard to find guys like that. And I think that, you know, having that one guy you can kind of cement in every single week you feel good about, and then that second RB slot is the one that you then fill with the waiver wire guy that you pick up. You know, one of these ambiguous backfields that you hit on. You know, you draft a couple of them, only one hits. Okay, that's where I fill in with my James Conner and my Leonard Fournette. Like, you know, try and rely on hitting on two of those guys is a little bit fringier because people know about this strategy. Like, people are taking shots on some of these ambiguous backfields. So you're not guaranteed to get, you know, pieces of each one to hope that you do end up getting one. But I think that having one kind of fringy running back in your RB2 slot also kind of keeps you intense and proactive on the waiver wire. Like, people sometimes sit back, I think, you know, if you have two stud running backs, like, oh, I don't need to go aggressive on Elijah Mitchell this week because I have two studs. Okay, well, now you don't have McCaffrey anymore, or now you don't have Dalvin Cook anymore. You should have bid aggressively on Elijah Mitchell when you had the chance, but you never did because you invested the draft capital so early on to some of these running backs. So I do think that's still, you know, drafting one of these stud running backs. I mean, like, what are you not going to draft Jonathan Taylor because you want to go zero RB? Like, that doesn't make sense to me from my mindset, especially because there are ways where zero RB fails if you don't draft Cooper Kupp and you drafted Robert Woods instead. Like, that's bad. Like, that's not going to help your team ultimately win out, because receivers and tight ends also get hurt. You know, Kittle got hurt, Waller got hurt. You know, there's plenty of examples of other positions getting hurt, not just running back. So I do think that the hero RB is still the way to go.
Any strategy works if you pick the right players.
Yeah, exactly. There
we go. Sometimes it boils down to just being that simple. Before we move on with the show, I'd like to tell you guys about another one of today's sponsors, Beachbound. They're an online travel agency with expertise in worldwide beach vacations, and they're reinventing beach experiences. It's a one-stop travel shop for flights, hotels, transfers, and excursions. In life, we're all bound for different things. With Beachbound.com vacations, you could be bound for adventure, bound for passion, bound for discovery, or bound for togetherness, bound for immersion, bound for rejuvenation, or maybe bound for encountering the unexpected. Personally, when I'm at a beach resort, I'm bound to end up at the poolside bar, or beachfront bar, or dockside bar, or you get the idea. As long as I've got a good view and a good drink in my hand, I'll be as happy as can be. With beachbound.com, you can find the perfect beach vacation for you, no matter what you're looking for. What are you bound for? So let's move on to the quarterback takeaways. And once again, I'm going to run through the top 12 at the position. So let me take a deep breath here. Okay, number 12, Derek Carr, 255 points. His ADP was 190th overall, QB23. Number 11, Kirk Cousins, 285 points, ADP of 150th overall, QB18. Number 10, Kyler Murray, 293 points. He only played 13 games, which was the fewest on this list. By average, he was actually fourth on this list. His ADP was 37th overall, QB3. Dak Prescott, 298 points, ADP of 53rd overall, QB6. Number 8, Jalen Hurts, 321 points, an ADP of 96th overall, QB12. Number 7, Aaron Rodgers, 322 points, ADP of 46th overall, QB5. Number 6, Matthew Stafford, 327 points, ADP of 81st overall, QB10. Number 5, Joe Burrow, 328 points, ADP of 107th overall, QB13. Number 4, Patrick Mahomes, 348 points, ADP of 13th overall, QB1. Number 3, Tom Brady, 361 points, ADP of 68th overall, QB9. Number 2, Justin Herbert, 367 points, 59th overall, QB8. And number 1, Josh Allen, 393 points. His ADP was 26th overall. That was QB2. So Yates, what is your biggest takeaway from the top 12 at quarterback?
Yeah, as I looked at this list, I think the one thing that jumped out to me was that the mid-round quarterback strategy was probably the way to go. You look at the names in this list, you got Joe Burrow as the QB13, right? Matthew Stafford, QB10. Aaron Rodgers was QB5 a little bit further up, but he would have been worth taking the shot on. Jalen Hurts, Dak Prescott. Like, I think that Justin Herbert, you know, Tom Brady too, even QB9, like that range was definitely worth taking the shot on because it didn't sacrifice your ability to be able to secure a high level running back, a high level wide receiver, but yet you still had a consistent and solid option every single week, right? I typically will move into the year. This has been my strategy in years past, is like, I'll go into the year and say like, okay, who are the late round quarterbacks? I will wait until the final round of my draft and I will take, you know, whatever. And I think looking at next year, I'm going to be more willing, depending on how ADP settles out and everything like that. But that's going to be the range where I'm willing to take the shot, round 6 to 10, maybe 11, whatever, however you want to classify mid round. Like, that's going to be the shot where I take my quarterback, right, in one QB leagues, because Josh Allen would have been great to have him on my roster. Obviously, 393 fantasy points, that's fantastic. But we also didn't know exactly with that top tier of Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Kyler Murray was in there too, of how exactly is this going to settle out, right? So you could have taken Mahomes, and it, you know, you had to take Mahomes in what, the third round, beginning of the third round, stuff like that. That's a little bit too high for this value and what he brought. I mean, he still finished great, but he had plenty of down moments throughout the season and plenty of spiked games. So all that to say, I just think that going into next year, that mid-round range is really where I have been kind of hesitant to pull the trigger on my quarterback in years past. That's probably where I'm going to be taking the shot on some of these guys in 2022.
Yeah, before I get to Andrew, I just want to mention Mahomes was technically, his ADP was 13th overall, but I think that is representative of the fact that in a lot of casual leagues, and you see this every year, the quarterbacks, especially the big-name guys, do go much earlier than you might see in what you would call a quote-unquote more competitive league, more of an experts format. So it is important to remember with the ADPs for the big-name quarterbacks specifically, those are usually juiced a little higher than you might expect. Let me just remind everybody of that 12-1, Carr, Cousins, Murray, Prescott, Hurts, Rodgers, Stafford, Burrow, Mahomes, Brady, Herbert, Allen. Andrew, what's your biggest takeaway there?
I mean, I think that for me, it's still that late round quarterback is not dead. I mean, when you look at where you could get some of these guys like Brady and Hurts, I mean, their ADP was outside the top eight quarterbacks. Like, you could get those guys at values, and both those guys were top seven quarterbacks. Brady was top three. Hurts obviously kind of fell off a little bit towards the end because he got hurt, but you know, he was a lock and load. Like, these are the two guys I had like probably the most of in my own personal drafts. Like, those are the guys that, like, once, you know, hit round nine, okay, where's Hurts, where's Brady? Like, those are the guys I was locking in on, especially because they had really easy schedules to open the season with. So I think that's important to look at. Like, when you draft your quarterback, who do they play week one? Oh, they play the Falcons? Oh, great. Like, that's awesome. Right. Like, you got to know, you can't, like, draft a late round quarterback and then realize, oh, well, they're playing Pittsburgh week one, or a tough defense that we look at on paper. It's like, well, you don't want to play him that week. So why did you draft that quarterback? Especially, you know, if you... The point of late round quarterback is to find a guy that you can use every single week. You know, the idea isn't to live by streaming. It's, you know, you get by streaming. Eventually you want to be able to find a guy that you can play confidently every single week that gives you a QB1 upside, which Jalen Hurts and Tom Brady both delivered. So yeah, I still think that the late round quarterback is still in play. And I also think that, you know, the pocket passer is not dead quite yet. We're just seeing, again, you know, there's almost been an overcorrection by, I think, you know, fantasy gamers and analysts alike, where, you know, we value the rushing a lot, but it's almost to a point where it's like, we don't care anymore. It's like, if you don't rush, then you're like useless. You're like, you're dead to me. But if you have these pocket passers that just have that run in these pass heavy offenses that are loaded with weapons, like, those guys get it done too. And that's why Brady fell, because he didn't run. And that's why Rodgers is value sometimes, because they don't run. But when you throw for 40 touchdowns, like, you find a way to get it done for your fantasy team. So those are my two big takeaways.
Yeah, I had a similar thought. Eight of the top 12, you could argue, and a lot of these guys have some mobility. Like, it's not like they run zero times. I mean, somebody like Brady does, but some of these pocket passers do still run a little, but really eight of those top 12, you could classify as not a guy that you would consider a true dual threat. So that, I thought that was interesting too. You know, the QB position as a whole has taken a step up in scoring. In each of the top eight scorers this year would have finished third or higher as recently as 2019. So just in the last couple of years, we are still seeing the position score more and more at the top. But like you said, it wasn't just those dual threat guys. So I guess my sort of overall question is, what do you expect for the future of the position? How long can guys like Brady and Rodgers keep finishing in the top eight? I know you said the pocket passer isn't dead, but as the younger guys continue to come in and the guys like Brady and Rodgers and Stafford in a few years start to age out of being at the top eight at the position, do you think that the position will still look like as pocket passer heavy as it is right now? Or do you think this was more of a blip, Andrew?
I mean, I do think that you still want to try and target quarterbacks that do have some rushing, because it just adds an extra floor to their game where it just doesn't exist. Like, if Brady doesn't throw for four touchdowns or three touchdowns, then, you know, you're just hoping on yardage to get there. But, you know, efficiency tends to carry over pretty well for quarterbacks that are still like operating at a high level. And that's kind of what you should be chasing, because projected volume for passing teams is really a lot of the times related on game script, dependent on the offense that you're playing in. You know, some offenses we can look at, like the Bills or the Buccaneers, where they just throw the ball like no matter what. You know, just that's how they operate. So that's always something to keep in mind. You know, that's what you want. Like, that's the pocket passer that plays in an offense that throws no matter what. Like, it doesn't matter if they're winning, doesn't matter if they're losing. That's what you want. It's the pocket passers that turn to go run heavy that are kind of like you need to shy away from, because those guys have spike weeks when they have to throw more, but then they dud out when their teams are winning games. They don't necessarily need to throw the ball nearly as often. So again, I'm still going to value, you know, rushing a little bit more. And obviously that made you look kind of foolish. I think that, you know, Trevor Lawrence was ranked like pretty high in terms of ADP, and that obviously just didn't work because he was just one of the most inefficient passers in the NFL last year. But he did show that he could move around a little bit. You know, he did flash a little bit towards the end of the season. So I still think that you do want to try to get a rushing quarterback at the end of the day. But I mean, if Brady and Rodgers become values again, it's like, you know what, I'm not going to bet against them. The two Hall of Fame guys, like, if Brady crumbles on my roster by week eight, okay, fine. But at least I know that at least for the first half of the season, I'll get some Hall of Fame production.
Yeah, nobody's ever gone broke betting on Tom Brady. Before we move on with the show, I do want to talk about today's final sponsor, TickPick. The NFL playoffs are here, and we're lucky to see some exciting matchups like 49ers-Packers, Bengals-Titans, and of course, the big one, Bills-Chiefs. And if you're trying to go to one of those matchups, there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet for tickets, because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site and the only one you'll ever need for your go-to tickets for the NFL, concerts, NBA, and more. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees that the other ticket sites charge, which lets them guarantee the best prices on all of their NFL playoff tickets. Still don't believe it? If you can find better prices for the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in the purchase price. Get your playoff tickets today at TickPick.com/pros and use code PROS for $10 off your first order of $50 or more when you select the Buy Now, Pay Later option, Zip, at checkout. So sort of just on that conversation of quarterback scoring and what the position and the landscape will look like going forward, Yates, does the overall higher scoring at the position in recent years change your strategy for when to draft a quarterback?
It's interesting. That's something that I actually hadn't heard until you pointed it out. So off the top of my head, I don't think that it necessarily will, because you look at the difference here as far as particularly with quarterback 10, which was Murray, and I know that Murray only played 13 games, but like 293 points to then QB5 is 328 points. Like, that's not a huge difference. So it's not like we're seeing necessarily that there is a drastic difference with the top five producers, and then it just completely falls off a cliff and then is kind of in a mess there. But it's really that it's pretty close from the all the way from the top to at QB1 to QB12. So I think it's great that there's more scoring at the quarterback position, but it's not necessarily something where I'm going to go change my strategy because of, you know, there's a big difference as far as where the points are coming from in that list. So I still think that you can take the shots on in the mid-round quarterbacks and still be fine. I don't think that that's necessarily going to be something that I change my strategy because of.
Andrew, I think for most people going into 2022, it's going to be either Josh Allen or Mahomes who are at the top of their rankings. Who's going to be number one for you?
It's going to be Josh Allen, and maybe it's some recency bias after he has yet to punt against the Patriots in, I think, like the last two games. But I mean, it's just his rushing takes him to the next level. Like, that just Mahomes just doesn't have as much rushing juice that Josh Allen has in his offense. You know, he's first in points per game and expected fantasy points per game in back-to-back seasons. So not only is he delivering real-life fantasy points, but the expectation is that he should be the number one quarterback. And he actually scored, you know, this past season, he scored under expectation. Like, he left points on the field and was still the best quarterback in fantasy football. So, you look at his surrounding weapons and, oh my God, like, we could be looking at an offense that gets rid of Cole Beasley, gets rid of Sanders, instead has Gabriel Davis, full-time player, you know, Isaiah McKenzie, full-time player. Like, why do you think that the Bills have been killing the Patriots? Because they stopped using these dusty veterans in the game. Like, they're using their young, you know, hungry, skilled playmakers. And it's like, what if they add another receiver? What if they go out and sign, you know, they splurge on Allen Robinson? Oh, they'll just like throw him into the Bills offense. Like, oh, great. Like, this offense could get better. And you look at, okay, Kelsey, is he, you know, starting to decline? Obviously, you have Tyreek Hill there, who's super explosive. But the Chiefs, like, still don't have, like, another guy in their offense. Like, the Bills are just loaded across everywhere. They have an emerging tight end. Like, you know, you look at, not like, we could be talking about Knox as potentially a better tight end in fantasy than Travis Kelsey next year. You know, that could be kind of the, you know, the a differentiating between the two tight ends, you know, as one kind of is emerging, the other one is kind of on the back end of his career. So, I mean, I still think it's clearly Josh Allen, and I was hoping not be recency biased, but I had actually ranked Josh Allen before he destroyed the Patriots as my number one quarterback in 2022. So I will stick with the Bills quarterback.
So Yates, assuming that you would also have Allen number one, who besides Allen and Mahomes do you think has the best chance of finishing number one next season?
Oh, man. I think that any of the guys in this list, like you talk about Kyler Murray, I know that he only played 13 games. That certainly hurt him. You mentioned QB4 in terms of points per game, I think is what you said. So definitely think that he has the potential to finish right back there. They're going to return a ton of the, you know, the star players that helped him out. And with his rushing ability, even though he took a major step back this year, as far as rushing ability, it's still there. So we could see that emerge again next year. I think that if you are looking at potentially a guy that's not even in this top 12, you want to turn to the rookie quarterbacks from this past year. If Trey Lance is a full-time starter next year, with his rushing ability, with the offense that he's in, with the playmakers, there is a legitimate possibility that he finishes as a QB1 overall. Am I going to call that? Am I going to rank it? No, but there, it's in the realm of possibilities. Justin Fields, if we get the right coaching staff in there with a competent system, like, yeah, we could see that as well, where Fields emerges and is someone based on his rushing ability as well, and how much he is able to change the game for fantasy with his rushing ability. That's someone too that we could be talking about as the potential QB1. But going into next year, it will be Josh Allen for me. Patrick Mahomes probably going to be QB2. Kyler Murray probably QB3. And then after that, it's going to be really interesting to see how all these other quarterbacks shake out in my rankings.
You touched on the sophomores. Who is your favorite second-year quarterback going into 2022, Yates?
It's
going
to be the guy that was my favorite coming into the year, and that's Trey Lance.
No surprise.
Yeah. You know, we talked about Lance as that guy that was the lottery ticket, right? The guy that you take in rounds 11, 12, 13, whatever it was in ADP last year, for the potential of, if he gets this starting job, he is going to be dominant for fantasy football because of his rushing ability, because of his size. He has the same skill set as Josh Allen. And we just saw Josh Allen finish as a QB1 in fantasy. Like, that is what he can do. And he has George Kittle, Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and, you know, Elijah Mitchell out of the backfield. Let's see if they continue to add pieces around him. Like, he has the ability to take that to the next level. And then especially too, when we saw Justin Fields fall because of the system around him, Trevor Lawrence fall because of Urban Meyer, and like, put all of that on Urban Meyer. I don't care. Put it all on his shoulders. It was Urban Meyer's fault. Like, you know, there's the potential that we see these guys take major steps forward next year. But as far as the guy that, if you are saying who is your favorite going into next year, it's still going to be Trey Lance for me.
Andrew, what about you? Your favorite second year guy?
Yeah, I think that Lance would probably be my favorite second-year guy as well. I do think that Fields does deserve some honorable mention. I mean, it really depends on, like, what they do, you know, who's the offensive coordinator, like, who's right. The head coach. Like, I think that matters a lot because, you know, when we saw Fields play last year, we saw a guy that could be, you know, a top 12 quarterback. That's what he was in his last four games, you know, averaged 21.7 fantasy points per game. He averaged 56 rushing yards in his last six games, which was second only to Lamar Jackson in terms of rushing yards per game for a starting quarterback. So he has all the intangibles of a quarterback we want to draft in fantasy football. Like, he has the rushing, and he showed a passing ceiling that we like. There are some nice pieces there in Chicago with Darnell Mooney, with Cole Kmet. So you can definitely, you know, tell yourself a story about how Fields does become a, you know, a fantasy quarterback that you can rely on, basically kind of like a Jalen Hurts-esque type of player in 2022, which is a matter of, okay, well, who do they bring? Like, if they bring in Brian Flores as like the head coach, okay, well, he's like a defensive-minded guy. Like, does that really help in terms of Fields' progression? So, I mean, right now it's like, I mean, you can't beat the situation with Lance in San Francisco with, you know, guys just playmakers litter all over the place. So I think that Lance definitely makes sense as the number two guy, but I think Fields also there. And then also I will mention, you know, Trevor Lawrence. I do think that you look at if they're able to improve a situation, you know, they obviously have a ton of draft capital. If they go out and draft, bring in, you know, some top tier talent, some wide receivers, just more around him, a better head coach, an offensive playmaker. Like, he showed, you know, that he had some poise in that last game that he played. We know that he is talented, and I just don't want to write him off too quickly. If you look at, you know, PFF has this expected points model. You know, if you look at last year, the quarterback that scored most fantasy points under expectation was Joe Burrow as a rookie. This past year was Trevor Lawrence. So we all saw Joe Burrow turn around as a number one overall pick. So I do think we're going to see a lot more from Trevor Lawrence, and he's going to be a much, much cheaper guy to draft because of just how bad his rookie year was.
You know, one name that you mentioned there that neither of you guys picked as a potential guy to finish number one, that I think, and maybe this is a little biased because I am a Ravens fan, but Lamar Jackson is somebody who's done it before relatively recently. And he was looking very good early on in the year. He sort of had a lull in the middle even before the injury, but he finished QB14 despite missing four games. He was QB8 on average. He was on pace for QB5 early on. And there were moments early on in the year, you know, obviously I watch every game very closely of theirs. And there were moments when he was making some passes that it almost felt like, uh-oh, Happy learned how to putt. Like, he's adding this element to his game and is now going to be borderline unstoppable. And he was playing behind a pretty dreadful offensive line. He didn't have Rashad Bateman early in the year. You know, the receiving core, even when Bateman did get healthy, still is nowhere near one of those upper level, you know, cores in the league. As long as he's healthy. And again, this was the first time he's ever missed games due to an injury. He's missed games for COVID recently and when he sat out because they'd already clinched the one seed. This is the first time he's ever missed a game for injury before. Do you think that he's somebody that you should reasonably rank back in the top five next season? Could he finish number one? Or do you think that the injuries will start to sort of catch up to him more and more as he plays more and just continues to take more hits? Yates, I'll start with you.
You're absolutely correct in bringing up Lamar Jackson. That's an oversight on my part. Lamar absolutely has the potential to finish as the QB1. You mentioned it. We've seen it. I think that recency bias plays a little bit of a factor in how we're evaluating Lamar because Yeah, you're right. At the beginning of the year, he was unstoppable. This offense was putting up ridiculous production on the offensive side of the ball. And then we just saw it like completely collapse, implode. Like it wasn't even a competent offense. It was everybody run short and then Lamar scramble and try to make something happen. So even before the injury, we have this in our minds where it's like Lamar's production fell off a cliff. He certainly still has the rushing ability. He's still going to be utilized heavily as a runner when he is healthy and on the field. So yes, he does have the potential, but I do think that there is this still in our minds of, okay, do they fix the offense? Like what do they do this offseason to make those specific steps to take the offense to the next level and fix it? Because again, it's not just that we have the recency bias of Lamar missing time with an injury and that potentially affects how we value him going into next year and rank him. It's also that the offense just looked like trash. So I think that kind of all plays a role in where exactly we rank Lamar, but he is still going to be a guy that is a QB6, QB7, QB8 off the board. That's going to be kind of the range where I rank Lamar Jackson heading into 2022.
And to sort of follow up on that and mention a guy that really probably deserves more of a conversation than we've given him, Andrew, who would you rank higher, Lamar or Justin Herbert, who did finish number two this season?
Yeah, I mean, Justin Herbert is just an absolute stud. Like the guy just continues to impress, and it's only just because his boneheaded coaching is just the only thing that's keeping him back. Imagine if he had got to play in Wild Card Weekend. Like that would have been really enjoyable to see from Justin Herbert.
You mean you didn't enjoy watching Ben Roethlisberger over potentially watching Justin Herbert in the playoffs?
I mean, I love being able to watch Roethlisberger average, 1.5 yards per attempt as much as the next guy. But I mean, it would have been nice to see some Bolts action out there. With Justin Herbert, so I do have him ranked, currently in my rankings above Lamar Jackson. I think I have him actually as quarterback 4. And it's just because he's just done so much as a passer in his first 2 years. I'm just blown away by, looking at some of PFF's metrics. One of the things I was kind of like concerned about Herbert was his passer rating as a rookie was higher under pressure than it was from a clean pocket. So it was like, okay, like that doesn't make a lot of sense. Like that's going to regress. And I actually made the mistake of kind of like weighing that too heavily, where I should have just been like, yeah, well, that just means he's probably just going to be better under a clean pocket. And that's exactly what happened. Like he wasn't as good as under pressure, but he was just better from a clean pocket. He finished 3rd in touchdowns, 5th in PFF passing grade from a clean pocket. And really all the pressure stats really say it's like the dude just is a monster off script. Like he can just make plays and just means he's a baller at the quarterback position. So I really think you cannot go wrong with Herbert as like a top 5 option for fantasy football. And again, even though Jackson definitely has the upper hand when it comes to rushing ability, like, I mean, Herbert has a real chance to throw like 40 touchdowns. Like, and as I've talked about before, like that should still be valuable when we're looking at some of these quarterbacks. And we've seen Herbert, have a ceiling in terms of rushing. He rushed for over 300 yards this past season, which is kind of like the sweet spot for not like the Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts rushers, but more of like that Mahomes type of rusher where you are still adding a little bit of value with him on the ground, especially in games that are going like back and forth shootouts. I mean, Herbert showed us this year, like he has a massive ceiling in some games when he is being, pushed by the other offense. So I think Herbert is a top 5 guy.
Let's wrap the show with some names that could be on the move this offseason. They might not necessarily all be for salary cap reasons, but just some of the biggest names that might be playing for different teams come 2022. We'll start with easily the biggest name, and that's Aaron Rodgers. And clearly he's not for cap reasons, but I don't need to get into the whole saga of Aaron Rodgers
over
the last little stretch. But so I'll just ask you right off the bat, do you think, and I'll ask both of you, Yates, you first, will Rodgers be a Packer next year? And if not, what team do you think he will be on?
Ooh, I will say that he leaves Green Bay. I think that maybe depending if they win the Super Bowl, then I think that that could be something where it's like, okay, maybe he comes back and tries to run it one more year. But I do think that the Packers push the timeline by drafting Jordan Love. And so it's like, are you going to keep Jordan Love and you're going to have to make the, fifth year option without actually having seen this guy play. So I think Aaron Rodgers, I will say that he leaves. And if he does you know, move. I think it's down between Denver and Pittsburgh, honestly, for me. Like, those two destinations are the ones that I kind of circle for Aaron Rodgers to say he could go to Denver. And he has, I mean, a solid defense behind. You got some pieces there. But then, I mean, Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, Noah Fant, Javonte Williams out of the backfield, Tim Patrick, KJ Hamler coming back. Like, that is just a loaded receiving corps. Everything that he's ever wanted in Green Bay, and the Packers front office never gave him. Pittsburgh would be, I think there's a connection there with Mike Tomlin. I think that there's a mutual respect there and friendship. So I think that that could be something where he might just want to go play for Tomlin, and hopefully that defense can take another step forward. But I do expect that Aaron Rodgers will not be in Green Bay next year.
Andrew, what percentage would you put on him leaving the Packers? And also, what team do you think he would go to if he does leave?
I think that the percentage, I'll give it a 30% chance. I think that he's going to stay in Green Bay. Like, as much as everything that's gone on, you know, what does he value the most now? Does he just want to keep winning Super Bowls? Because he literally is on the best team right now. Like, what team, if he went to Pittsburgh, he would literally be on a worse team. So, I mean, look, the Packers obviously messed up by drafting Jordan Love, but like, that's their fault. And it's like, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm like, dude, like, you guys screwed up. Like, I want to play on the best team. And I think that Davante Adams is what we'll kind of get into. It's like, the Packers have been pretty adamant about making sure Davante Adams is not leaving. So it's like, I mean, if he's not going to leave, are they going to, I think that's like a part of the conversation with keeping Rodgers. Like, that keeps Rodgers happy. I don't know. I just think that if they win the Super Bowl, especially, I think that maybe he'd want to stay. I mean, I do think Green Bay has it. You know, I think that they will win the Super Bowl this year. I think they have everything in their place. You can only make the NFC Championship game so many times and just keep to not win eventually one of them just by sheer luck. You, just, you know, you go so many times, eventually it's just going to, you know, work in your favor. So we'll see how they do against the 49ers run game, which is the obviously big bugaboo that they're going to have to try to stop because their run defense is sit a little questionable at times. But I will say that he stays in Green Bay and he continues to just ball out.
No follow-up, no explanation, just give me a number. Knowing what we know right now, Aaron Rodgers will be QB what next season? Yates?
I'll probably put him at QB 6, QB 7. I think that right where he finished this year. The situation obviously depends on where exactly, but QB 7, I'll say.
Andrew?
I'm trying to see where I have him in my ranking because I want to make sure that I'm spot on with my analysis. I think that I have him at QB... I actually have him QB 9, so I'm lower on everyone else than him. But yeah, I'll say QB 9.
And then another guy that we have on the list to talk about that let's assume Rodgers is not on the same team as him next year. And it's Davante Adams, because we know what to expect if he's on the field with Aaron Rodgers at this point. We don't really need to go into any extra analysis there. So assuming Rodgers is not there, or assuming that he leaves, Davante Adams, what percentage chance do you think he would leave Green Bay? And if he were to leave, where do you think he would want to go? And Yates, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so I think with Davante Adams, I think that he will want to leave if Aaron Rodgers is not there. The question is going to be whether or not Green Bay lets him with the franchise tag. So I think that that's going to be something to monitor as we move into next year. Let's say that Rodgers is back, then we just plug Davante Adams back in as the wide receiver one or two. You know, it's going to be him or Cooper Kupp.
Sure.
With Rodgers leaving and he stays in Green Bay, then it's Jordan Love. I think that from a draft ranking, I got something in my eye, goodness. Draft ranking, I think that we drop Davante Adams to like wide receiver 8, wide receiver 9, like still going to be someone that soaks up targets. Ball's got to go somewhere, and Davante Adams is always open. So I still think that he would be a target monster. The touchdown production would not be the same with Aaron Rodgers not in town. So, and then as far as where he goes, I think that the obvious one, the obvious spot that we talked about when we did the 2022 free agent preview on the Dynasty podcast was Las Vegas. You look at Las Vegas reuniting with Derek Carr, his quarterback at Fresno State. Like, I think that that's something where we could look at that fit. And that would still be where he's like a mid-range wide receiver one. But I just don't know, unless he's playing with Aaron Rodgers, I just don't know if he has the top three upside.
Andrew, let me ask you about another quarterback that might be on the move for reasons other than a salary cap, and that's Russell Wilson, who, again, sort of last year, not quite on the same level as Aaron Rodgers, but had a little bit of rumors and some noise around he might not want to be in Seattle anymore. He finishes QB 13 in average fantasy points per game. His ADP was QB 7 going into last year. It was his worst finish since 2016. Do you expect him to rebound regardless of where his destination is, or are you paying a lot of attention to where he ends up and that will sort of determine where you rank him going into next year? And to follow up on that, where do you think he will play next year?
So in terms of rebounding, so if he plays in Seattle, honestly, I don't even know if that really matters if he stays in Seattle, because I think that Russell Wilson has shown us that he has just been, you know, the track record, like you had mentioned before, you know, worst finish since 2016, but he's been a top six guy since 2014, four or five times. So like the efficiency is there, and that is going to go with him wherever. Like, he's the reason why Seattle's always had an efficient passing game. Like, the only thing that Seattle's offense has held him back from is throwing the ball like 40 times a game. Like, that's what Seattle's offense is really inhibiting, and they're slow, and that's all schematics. But the efficiency standpoint has always been there when Russ has been healthy, and it was this like that before his injury. Before his injury, weeks, the first couple weeks of the season, first in yards per attempt, first in passer rating from a clean pocket. So, you know, Russell Wilson didn't just like start to suck. Like, he got hurt. He came back too early from his injury. And we even saw over the last 2 weeks of the season, when he was more time removed from the injury, he was balling out. Like, he was averaging over 24 fantasy points per game. So I think that the discount on him is going to be something you want to scoop up in fantasy draft, because I think people are just going to think that he just sucked all year, which is not true. Like, he had his usual peaks and valleys, like Russell Wilson always does. It's like he streaks for half the season, is like unstoppable, and then he just sucks for the other half of the season when he usually plays like the Rams, because he's just not good against that defense. So I do think that he'll rebound if he stays in Seattle. He has Metcalf, he has Lockett, and they have that efficient passing game. So, and if he does leave, I think that there's a better chance that he leaves than Rodgers. I don't know if that's right or not. I don't know what the betting odds are for Russell Wilson. I know that the most recent report was that, you know, he's going to explore his options, but Seattle has him under contract and he has a no trade clause. So Seattle still has kind of is holding, you know, the cards in their hand, unless Russell Wilson kind of decides like to pull Deshaun Watson and just like not decide to play, or just, you know, basically sit out the season. So I do think that he would probably, it's 50-50 for me if he stays in Seattle. If he doesn't go to Seattle, I mean, I would love to see him in like Pittsburgh. I think that with those receivers there in place with Mike Tomlin, I think that would be a stellar combination between the two guys. Like Denver is also enticing as well, but I feel like if you're a quarterback, you want to win Super Bowls, like you don't want to play in a division with Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes. Like you're not going to, like, if you want to put, if all you do is care about numbers, then sure, like go to Denver. But if you want to win Super Bowls, like your path is not to go through the AFC West. Like, and that's going to suck for the Denver Broncos as they try to bring in like a coach. It's like, yeah, like good luck, like against Mahomes and Justin Herbert for the next like 15 years. Like, that's going to be tough for a lot of coaches to try to overcome that, because the Denver is definitely facing a massive uphill battle, because those teams have just such super established quarterbacks. So I think the path to least resistance actually through Pittsburgh, who definitely needs, like, I think more than anyone, a new quarterback, because there are so many good weapons we could see just flourish under a better offense.
Yates, let's quickly do one more quarterback. Kirk Cousins, he finished as QB 11 this year, like we mentioned earlier in the show. He was QB 18 in ADP. He hasn't finished below QB 13 since 2014. If he's on the move, where do you expect him to go? And about where would you rank him at the quarterback position?
It's going to be interesting with Cousins, because I think it's going to depend on the new coaching staff, the new GM, right? That's going to be the first domino, is what do you do with Kirk Cousins? Do you keep him around? And the production is there, right? Like, he's still performing and he's still leading to, you know, solid production. It's just a matter of, is that something that someone that you still want to build around? And it's going to depend on who the other quarterbacks that you could potentially move to, right? In free agency, we did this as a breakdown on the Dynasty pod. It's like, it's not a great free agent class. You know, you have Mitch Trubisky as like that main guy in that free agent class. And then you look at the rookie class, it's like, okay, well, it's not necessarily something where you see that as a huge upgrade over Cousins either. So are you completely hitting the restart button with Minnesota and just blowing it all up and rebuilding? Then trade Cousins and potentially, you know, acquire some capital there. I think that with Cousins, I'm going to say that he stays in Minnesota next year. It's going to be interesting as far as his production, though, with, okay, Adam Thielen. Do we have Thielen back, or is Thielen going to, you know, call it a career here, whereas he's just been injured a lot over the past couple of years, nearing the end of it? Do they add someone else? You know, so the ranking of Cousins next year is going to depend on what, really, there's a ton to break down, ton of variables with Minnesota. And I think that that's going to depend on where exactly. But as a like mid-range QB2, I'm still going to be taking the shots on Justin Fields, Trey Lance, you know, Trevor Lawrence. I probably won't take over Kirk Cousins next year. But those guys who have the rushing upside and don't have as many variables in their way will probably be the ones that I take the shots on over Kirk Cousins. So I'll probably rank Cousins around like QB 12 to 15.
Andrew, let's do one last big name here. And we haven't really talked about a lot of receivers today. So we'll do Michael Thomas. What percentage odds would you give of him leaving the Saints? Where do you think he would go if he does go? And about where are you planning to rank him next season?
Michael Thomas is such a tough guy to try to figure out what to do with. I think that he's definitely gone from the Saints. This is someone I definitely feel the most strongly about. I just think that the Saints are kind of like in a weird like rebuilding mode. I know they almost made the playoffs, but like we got question marks at quarterback. It's going to be Winston that comes back. We don't really know. And I mean, Michael Thomas, it seems like he has kind of wanted to get out of New Orleans. And there are a lot of teams that could use, hint, hint, you know, my New England Patriots could really use a big number one wide receiver on the outside. Just someone that can just pepper up targets for an up and coming quarterback. So I do think that Michael Thomas will be on his way out. So all this stuff, the Patriots, you know, even again, just teams that are trying, I mean, the Chiefs, like just add more firepower. Like you look at the Los Angeles Chargers, they're going to lose Mike Williams. Do they add another receiver? Keenan Allen is getting a little bit older. You know, there's a lot of places that I think that Michael Thomas could kind of end up going. Right now I have him ranked as wide receiver 20. So he's right in the same tier with Chris Godwin, Calvin Ridley, DeAndre Hopkins. So basically the tier of question mark wide receivers. I'm trying to figure out like,
I don't know what to do with these guys. I'll put them right here.
I have no idea like where Calvin Ridley is going to play, whether he's playing at all. Hopkins has obviously been banged up and his role has been limited a little bit more in Arizona. So I do think he's definitely on the way out. And really it's like, what about, you know, Jacksonville? You know, he can be the number one there, you know, work with Trevor Lawrence. There's a lot of options there with Michael Thomas, but ultimately I do think that I feel confident that saying he's not going to be there. Not so sure exactly where he'll go.
Guys, we're low on time, so we are going to wrap up, but I haven't been on in a while. So, you know, I have to squeeze in a little time for Yates's favorite segment. Last month, we did hit on a bunch of holiday themed pop culture questions. So today we're just going with the classic one. Who is the best main character in a sitcom? Because everybody's favorite characters are always the funny side guys. The example I like to use is in How I Met Your Mother. Everybody loves Marshall and Barney a whole lot more than they like Ted. So Yates, who is your favorite lead character in any sitcom?
Well, it's interesting because like you think of Friends and like, OK, who's the lead character in Friends? It's like, well, there isn't really one. You think of Parks and Rec and it's like Leslie Knope is the main character, but the guy who everyone loves, I don't know if I would call him a side character because they all kind of balance out. So I'm going to cheat. I'm going to say Parks and Rec and I'm going to say Ron Swanson as kind of because the show may be about Leslie Knope, but everyone is tuning in to find out what Ron Swanson is going to say and what he's going to do. So I will cheat a little bit. I'll say Ron Swanson.
Andrew, I know this is our first time podcasting together, so I don't know how you feel about sitcoms, but would you care to weigh in?
I've been really thrown off right here. I don't know what I'm going to say. Oh, man, sitcoms, man. Does Game of Thrones count as a sitcom? No, probably not. I don't know. I've been watching The Office recently, kind of like for the first time, actually. So I don't even know if there really is a main character in The Office. I guess, like, at least the seasons that I've been watching, it's Michael Scott. So yeah. I'll go with him.
I think Michael Scott is almost maybe too easy of an answer. I'll totally allow it. But I think he is probably the correct answer is maybe the way I should phrase it because he's one of the funniest characters ever. In not trying to pick him, I put Jake Peralta because he's clearly the main character of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
That was like my backup if you guys were going to just come at me like, no, you can't pick Michael Scott. You got to pick somebody else.
Okay, so quick thing. I know that you guys don't have kids, but I will allude to dad life here. Encanto? Fantastic Disney movie, you guys, Pixar, whatever. I'm going to have people that come at me and are angry that I don't know which one it is. Fantastic movie. You guys should watch it. You would enjoy it. Stephanie Beatriz is Rosa Diaz in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Mm-hmm. She is the main voice of Maribel, who is the main character in Encanto, and you would never know it.
I was going to say, she doesn't strike me as like a lead kids animated movie. It's like, at least not at her as Diaz.
Her voice that she does as Rosa is not her normal voice. Her normal voice is like 5 octaves higher. And so, yeah, you guys should check that out.
Impressive range from her. Thank you guys for indulging me as always. And thank you both for a fantastic episode today. Please, everybody, remember all the awesome opportunities we mentioned, including LinkedIn, Beachbound, and TickPick. Most of all, thank you, the fans, for listening. For Yates and Andrew, I'm Ryan Wormley. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/FantasyPros.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Explore a wide selection of luxury spirits, wine, and champagne at reservebar.com. Elevate your gifting this year with rare and exceptional bourbons, tequilas, scotch, wine, champagne, with personalized engraving, exceptional glassware, and more. From wines to whiskeys, there's a bottle for everyone. For a limited time, save $20 on your order of $150 plus with the code IHEART at reservebar.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.